Welcome. You're listening to Raw Health Rebel Podcast with Lisa Strabak. It's time to disrupt the current view of health and return to the raw basics that true wellness comes from within. On the 24th of July 2021, Jacqueline Dunn made an inspirational speech in Trafalgar Square at the London Freedom Demonstration on 10 ways to make a stand against tyranny. It is an absolute honour and privilege to have Jacqueline join me on my podcast to deep dive into each of these 10 things we can do. No more talking, it's time to take action. Now is the time to make hay while the sun is shining. Some of the things that Jacqueline chats through include conscious consumerism, a stand in the park, growing your own community resistance and community support, ditching the iPhone, home education, reducing your toxic load, being your own saviour, raising your vibration, and staying in the light and playing your part in creating the new world. So, I want to say thank you so much, because do you know what? I was going to like hang up my headphones for the summer just to get a little bit of a rest and, you know, take stock before the shit show kicks off in the autumn. And then I just heard your speech again. I was listening to it and I was like, oh my God, everyone needs to hear this. You know, it needs to be on Tannoy, like everywhere for the whole country to hear, because you say no more talking, take action. And I really think that's what we need to do. So I thought if we could, you know, chat through, sort of deep dive a bit more into sort of the points on your speech. And then hopefully that gives everyone, you know, a little bit of time over the summer to go and make hay while the sun's shining, so to speak.
Yeah, and they're all points that everybody can action, you know, some more than others, but some of them are just food for thought. But there is something that everyone can be doing in there. And that's what we need. We need empowerment, because I think we've spent 18 months feeling completely disempowered. And now people just want to be knowing that they're doing something, however small that is.
Yeah, exactly. I loved it. You know, honestly, I was moved to tears by the end of it. And I shared your on the last point, stay in the light, I shared one of your quotes and I put a link on my Instagram page, and other people had said that they listened to your speech and were moved to tears as well. You know, it was just, yeah, empowering and uplifting, and you're right. So can we go through some of those? I mean, I don't know if you want to go through them in the order, or what do you think is the most important point?
I mean, I'd kind of put them in order, or one leads into the other. Mm-hmm. They all do kind of interlock a little bit, because if you do one, that kind of leads you into the next. The only one that's really standalone, which is why I did it first, and it's something that everybody can be doing, is the conscious consumerism, because mm-hmm. everybody's spending money every single day, practically, if it's down to your food, shopping, toiletries, you know, we are all consumers. And we can do that in a more conscious manner, because what I realized is we are spending money with companies that are completely unaligned to our beliefs and our core mm-hmm. values. So why would we be doing that when we can take ownership of spending it elsewhere? There was a huge wealth exchange, people talking about businesses were destroyed during the first lockdown. And I don't see that. I see a wealth exchange happened between huge corporations took all the money and all the small businesses were destroyed. I think it's something like 3.9 billion were lost in small businesses, and the same amount, practically to the penny, was gained in the big corporations like Amazon and Starbucks and Tesco's. No, they all gained. And that's all by design. That's completely by design, because it's no more dangerous going into a small business as a Tesco's. I mean, it's not dangerous at all, but if you're going to look at it from that perspective, it's insane. So there was this huge wealth exchange, and we all played a part in that. We participated in that. I mean, my Amazon Prime was on fire during the first lockdown, because it was constantly the only place that you could get things quickly and without having to go out and be amongst masked morons, quite frankly. I mean, it's not fair, they're in fear, I understand. So yeah, that it, I was using it. And then it's only when you take a step back and you think, you know, I was reading that Starbucks and Amazon helped to fund the vaccine rollout. And I was thinking, I funded that too then, because I was paying for my Amazon Prime. I was using their facilities, their organization. So I've helped that. And I'm so completely against it. We need to be more where we're spending our money. So yeah, I think it's a really, really important message. It's not incredibly easy. It does mean, because we've become so used to convenience, you know, that's why Amazon Prime is such a handy thing for most people, and they'll happily pay the whatever it is, 70, 80 pounds a year or whatever, because it's a convenience. Things can, a few clicks and things turn up on your door the next day. They don't even have to leave house. But we've become too reliant on convenience, and we're not looking at what that convenience is costing us. So yeah, you do have to be a little bit more organized. I've been shopping at more local farm shops. It can be more expensive for a single product, but actually you end up spending less in the farm shop, because obviously they don't sell the crisps and the biscuits and everything else. Well, they're on special, I'll get some of those, we like those. So it's a false economy, actually. And unhealthy food tends to be cheaper, but that's a false economy as well, because what's really, really expensive is being sick. You completely lose your ability to earn an income in many cases. So that's really expensive. So we should be safeguarding that, and we should be making sure that we are making better choices, not just for ourselves, but for the whole world in terms of conscious consumerism. There's a really great page that's just been set up on Facebook, and they've got a website called Awakened Pages, and they are listing for free all the awake businesses. So that you can literally just go online and have a look and see who's in your area, because I would rather spend my money, if I need a plumber, with a one-man band, a small local company, their profits go towards feeding their family or taking their family away for a break. You know, it's all put back into a small business. Whereas, you know, you go for these big organisations, you know, we've had lots of uproar about Pimlico Plumbers, for example, really big brand there. And he's saying, oh, his plumbers are going to be vaccinated. And I don't want to support a company like that. And I don't want to support a big organization that, you know, you're just funding a massive, massive corporation. So it's just thinking about how and where you're going to spend your money. And I've really started to become more conscious of it. I went away to the Isle of Wight for a week with my family for a holiday, and went to the stand in the park there and spoke to all the guys at the Sandon Park. Obviously they live there, and I was like, okay, who's the awake restaurants, what's the good places to visit, because I still want to do that when I'm away, and I also don't want to go into somewhere and be hounded and discriminated against because we're non-mask wearers and we haven't been vaccinated. So therefore I can make sure that I safeguard myself from that by only supporting the companies that are just freedom of choice. So we can combat this if we all stand together, stand strong, and support each other. And we can also divert the money that is being used to fuel some of the stuff that we disagree with.
Yeah, I love that. And I joined actually Awakened Pages this morning. I'll put a link in the show notes to it. You're right, though, that the difficulty is Amazon Prime is too bloody easy, isn't it? To just buy now, swipe, arrives tomorrow. It involves a bit more thought and conscious consumerism. But it's so important that we do put our money where our mouths are, so to speak.
So important, isn't it? And I think Jeff Bezos, his millions or billions went through the roof in 2020, which, you know, that shouldn't be the way when you've got people who have completely lost generations of businesses. You know, these family businesses that have been in the family for generations, they went. And then you've got some guy that we don't know, never met, doesn't live in our village, and he's, you know, rolling in it because we are allowing that to happen. It's wrong. It's wrong. And we could distribute the wealth a lot more evenly if we tried.
Definitely. I'm definitely going to be cancelling my Amazon Prime, I think, when I get off, because that's if we've got it, we'll use it. I think we're a creature of habits, aren't we? Yeah. So the next one that you spoke about was Stand in the Park, and I have to say, for me personally, I've only been to a few, but it's been just because of holidays and things. It's been a lifesaver. I've connected with such wonderful, like-minded people, and we found like-minded businesses. We've started a local meditation evening session on a weekly basis, and I found it to be just so wonderful to realise, that I'm not alone, just purely on that perspective. Can you tell them a little bit more?
That's what they've been amazing for. And I included that one because I was speaking to a lot of people who said, "Oh, I live in a small village. I think I'm the only person." I'm like, "Well, do you know where your local Stand in the Park is?" So I don't know anything about Stand in the Park. I just assumed because I'm so involved in this movement that everybody knew about Stand in the Park. So I thought it's definitely worth mentioning, because even though when you're at the actual rally, when you're speaking, everybody there is probably going to know about Stand in the Park. You're preaching to the converted there. But speeches do tend to get recorded, they go viral, and then other people get to learn about it. So it's a really good place for a foundation of finding like-minded people that then you build. That's why one point leads into the other, because point three and four are about community and community resistance. But generally, that community resistance starts from your Stand in the Park, because you go there and you might just be the only person standing there. Because that's what I've said to a few people. They say, "Oh, there isn't one local to me." We'll start one then. Someone has to. And eventually, there could be somebody else local that's waiting for someone to start one. And eventually, you will stand in the park on your own, I'm sure. But it goes on their website, they'll promote it, other people will end up turning up, and it starts to grow. We've actually got three in our local area now because they've become quite big. The main one became quite big, so they kind of branched off into smaller villages, and then they've grown as well. So, but they've all started really small, and then our local resistance have grown. We've got more people out on the streets talking to people, opening dialogue, handing out leaflets. But that's all come from a Stand in the Park. What they did at the Isle of Wight one, they had a bucket and they had a whip round at the end, and people were putting anything for 50p to a fiver in. But that's how they print out their newspapers, not newspapers, leaflets, which they put inside the light paper and distribute them, and they had a big banner. So they're funding what they need to fund as well, to get things going, because not everybody wants to pay out. I had 20,000 leaflets printed locally, and I think that was like £200. Now, that's a lot for somebody to pay out, but if you've got a lot of people putting in a couple of quid for standing in the park each week, then you've got 20,000 leaflets turn up on your doorstep, and you're ready to go and speak to people and start creating some informed consent for people, because that's the biggest thing. It's not going out there and telling people not to take the vaccine, and you're wearing a mask is poisoning you, all of that kind of stuff, because we need to really be very gentle with our approach, which actually I come under fire for saying. I'm saying that I'm quite a peaceful person, and I don't like the anger and the animosity that these protests, if I always try and put myself in somebody else's position, if I was sitting in a street cafe and I saw this rowdy protest go past, and they've got the smoke signal things that they have, and they've got the megaphones, and they're all chanting and they're angry, it would be quite frightening if you're outside. Because you don't know what it's about, and it can make you quite resistant to it. So we don't want that. We need to just be chatting to people and saying, "Can I tell you a little bit about why I've decided not to have the vaccine?" And some people are like, "I'm not interested. I've had mine." I'm like, "But what about your children?" And you do get some really, it's fear. It's a fear-based response. They just push you away, and that's fine. That's everybody's journey. You have to honor that. But there are people that are willing to listen. And if you're out there speaking gently to somebody, just giving them some facts and stats that are from the government websites, you may just make somebody think twice. You may just make somebody's mind change. And that's why it's really, really important. And that generally all starts from Stand in the Park, because that's where you connect. People don't feel comfortable to go out on the street, start speaking to people on their own. You get this community, and then you start growing your resistance, and start growing your support.
You're right, and it has to, I agree that it has to be that gentle approach. I think an angry mob like is not the way to go about it's to show compassion as well, because a lot of these people, they just don't know at all. They just watch the media, they don't know any different. And
Protests aren't They're very peaceful and they're really lovely, friendly, genuine people. But you wouldn't know that from as an outsider. And I watch, I'm a people watcher. And like my ideal afternoon would just be to go and sit in a arrivals lounge of an airport and just watch people arriving. And in my mind, I'm making up their life stories. I get that from my mum, bless her. But I'm a people watcher. So when I'm at the protests, I'm watching the sidelines and I can see that there's parents holding on really tight to their children's hands and saying, "Don't be frightened, it's okay." And I think, you know, that's where we're losing people a little bit. And you know, I don't want to put them down, the protests, because they've been invaluable in growing this movement, but at the same time we might need to just be a little bit more gentle in our approach if we want to start speaking to people that aren't in this movement and start helping them to understand what they're not being told.
Yeah, no, I completely agree 100%. I felt that sort of, and not to go off too much on a tangent here, because the message is about action, but I felt that at the last protest that it wasn't helpful in terms of people that weren't already on the same page, you know. And it even sort of when people are marching through London and there's loads of people, you know, walk, it's more visible. But I do, you know, I sort of feel that quite strongly, and I think the gentle approach. And you know what, I've been surprised talking to people, some people you would think would know better in the alternative health field didn't know that the vaccine was still under medical trials. They didn't know that Moderna was an mRNA vaccine. I was like, God, you know, they actually just don't know the most basic of
That's what I think. You don't have to go deep into all of the stuff that we might have learned over the last year, because that's just going to blow someone's mind and actually think that we're conspiracy theorists if we start talking about that kind of stuff. But if you just stick to the government facts and stats, I mean, I was speaking to a parent a couple of days ago, and she said to me, "Oh, have you had your vaccine?" And I was like, "No, I haven't." And she said, "Oh, I've had my first one." And I said, "Well," she said, "why didn't you want yours?" And I said, "Oh, I'm not really comfortable participating in a medical trial." She went, "What do you mean?" I said, "Well, it's under emergency license only by the MHRA and clinical phase 3 trials to 2023. So actually having the vaccine, you are participating in a medical trial. We've got no long-term data." She was like, "Well, they never told me that." Well, they're not going to. They want people have this without any fear. That's why all the adverse events and deaths are being brushed under the carpet, and you won't even be told about the yellow card reporting scheme. I actually, my husband's grandma's brother died after having the vaccine. So he had strokes and blood clots and eventually a heart attack. In his late 80s, but it was horrific. And they never told the family about the yellow card scheme. I told the family about the yellow card scheme. So this is the kind of information that we need to tell people. Even if we don't change anybody's mind, just say to them, please, if you do have an adverse event, make sure you report it to the yellow card scheme, because at the moment we're only getting between 1% and 10% of adverse events being reported. So we need true facts and stats to be able to share with other people. So just encouraging them, because they're not being told. So just really simple things that we can keep, basic government stats, because these people are generally been listening to everything the government has said anyway. So if we can keep them on that path in terms of, look, the government have said this, then it kind of opens their eyes a little bit.
Yeah, and that's so important, especially, you know, with the rollout to the 16 and 17 year olds and inevitably, you know,
absolutely,
kids that were coming.
Understand about Gillick competence. That's another thing that a lot of parents don't understand about. What I'm hearing from a lot of parents, which is actually quite reassuring, is they've had the vaccine, but there's no way their kids are going to have it. I'm not consenting to that. And the minute I say to them, "But do you know about Gillick competence? You don't need to consent," they are horrified. They are horrified, and then they understand how the lengths that the government will go to get people to get the uptake. And I say, "Well, I'm not sure why you're surprised, because you can see the coercion that's gone on. You know, they're threatening people's holidays, they're threatening people's jobs, they're offering you a donut, for Christ's sake. You know, they're going to stop at nothing to get full uptake." And yeah, just simple things like that, even though they may have had it themselves, people are going to be very reluctant to allow their children to participate. There will probably be people queuing up for that as well. I know that.
And I hope that's where we might see change, you know, in the future, you know, that people will sort of stop and think more or research, because quite often adults are busy, they don't bother, you know, looking after their health. But I think it's different when it comes, I hope to think it'll be different when it comes to the kids.
I always thought this would be the common ground between the kind of the pro and anti, not that I like to use those choices, those words, because I don't think there is a pro and anti. I think the middle ground that we should all be standing on is body autonomy, medical freedom and informed choices. But when it comes to our children, that's where we should all be standing very firmly, because, you know, that is extremely concerning that they will possibly be making this a mandate for schools. It's happened in other countries. We are in a lockstep government, so what happens in one country generally filters through at the moment. So that's concerning when you look at what's happened in other countries. And even in countries like France, they've made homeschooling illegal. So I've spoken to people and they've said, well, if they make mandated vaccines, then I'll pull my child out of school. Well, what happens in France? What are we going to do then? You know, that we've got homeschooling is illegal. You've got no choice then. So this is why there's a level of protesting happening in France.
That's shocking. I knew that homeschooling was illegal in Germany. I didn't realise that it is in France as well.
Right. I think the law was passed last year, and it did come into play at the very beginning of this year or late last year. But yeah.
Yeah, that's, and nothing's being covered on the French protests, really, in the mainstream media, is it, right now?
You have to be on RT or Rapley or Richie Allen UK column, all of the alternative ones, but it's out there for people to see, and it is absolutely.
And I'm going to post all the links in the show notes so people can go and sign up and, you know, get their news source from the appropriate places. So stand in the park, yeah, I mean, it is amazing. And you were saying sort of obviously community resistance, and then from there community support as well, you know. And I love the fact doing sort of trade and time swaps as well, and seeing who's in your group. And what type of people do you have in your group?
We're really lucky, actually. In fact, on Thursday I had a meeting at my house, and I think we had 20 people here, and I invited two other people from other areas because they're friends, and I wanted them to see, kind of create a blueprint. This is what we're doing, you can take it and do it in your areas. One of the guys said to me, I can't believe the array of skills that you've got in this area. So we've got an amazing lady who is so knowledgeable on gardening and horticulture, and she's run charities to help people to get growing and get digging and start their own fruit and veg patches. So we've got her. She is an absolute godsend, because we're started community vegetable patches, and we're all going to start to contribute to that, so that we have that as a, what our ultimate aim is to become self-sufficient community, so that we don't need to rely on all of these big corporations at all. That would be the ultimate aim. It's obviously going to take time to create, but we've got a homeopath, we've got a nutritionist, we've got a lady that's specialised in horticulture, haberdashery, a baker, a lady that's got chickens, a nurse. So we're really, really blessed. We're really fortunate. But then there's people that, bless them, they say, well, I don't actually have any skills. I'm like, but you're a mum, you know, you can help out with childcare, you know, you must feed your kids, you cook, there's always something. And then they'll be like, oh yeah, I do this, and it kind of triggers something in them. They used to be a PA in the city, which is amazing admin skill, because no one wants to do the admin. If we're keeping a time bank and we're spending, we swap an hour for an hour, so we don't believe that anybody's hour is more worthy of another hour, so it's just an hour for an hour. So you can swap an hour personal training for an hour baking. That's just how it works, an hour for an hour. And people obviously need to keep track of that, so we need admin people to do that. We've we've all started now to put a little bit of money in so that we can buy seeds, and the area that we're growing the fruit and veg on needed to be secured. So we had to put a new gate on. So somebody's keeping track of that as well. So yeah, it's grown really quickly, and it's been amazing to see who's coming forward and what their skill sets are and how up they are for change. Because I think what we've been doing over the last 18 months has been focusing on trying to get the old back and really creating a fuss about losing what we had. And it was kind of late last year that I thought, not really sure I want the old back anyway. And we've been spending so long fighting what we don't want. We need to be creating what we do want now. And we need to be spending our energy on that. And then it doesn't matter what they do, because we've created what we want anyway over here. So they can just crack on with closing down banks and doing whatever they like. But because we've got our own thing going on here. So, yeah, it's a little bit like bullying. You just move away from the bullies and you create your own friendship group. that's what we're doing.
I love, you know, that's, yeah, given me sort of goosebumps, because that is exactly what we need to do. Like, I think sod what's going on now. Like, we need to, yeah, create our own new society. Sounds a bit big, but basically we do. I think, how have you done the community land? Because I know that's something that people in the local stand in the parks around me are sort of looking into land, or how it's something that we have sort of dreams to do. But sort of, how have you actually made that happen?
I'm really lucky, because there was a lady in our group who had some land already, and she couldn't get any planning permission for it, so it was just sitting there. And she said, come and have a look at it. If you can make use of it, I'm happy for you to use it. So we were incredibly fortunate. That's the one we had to secure, because it was just kind of sandwiched between two residential properties. So we've been incredibly fortunate with who we've landed in our community. And we're very lucky where I live, because it's quite rural. I'm in rural Essex, on the kind of the Essex Hertfordshire borders. So there's quite a lot of land around here anyway, and there are a lot of people who are landowners. What we've come to find out recently is a lot of landowners are very precious about their land. It's been in the family for generations. They don't want to give anything away. They don't even want to sell anything, not even half an acre. So it's difficult to try and communicate with them. We are trying to approach local landowner businesses, because a lot of them have their own farms. So they might have, for example, we've got a local fruit farm. They've often supplied to Tesco's. So we are approaching them and saying, you know, cut out the middleman, supply to direct to us. We've got 120 people now in our community group, and we all want supplying to. So, you know, we'll do that. So approaching these small local run businesses that don't want to deal with these big corporates, because they can be really difficult to deal with, and they can absolutely fleece them in terms of money as well. So they're happy often to cut out that middleman and just supply directly. Something I learned on the first lockdown, because I didn't want to go to the big supermarkets, I just found them very an energy drain. You know, you went in up outside, people were in the masks, constant hand sanitizing. I just felt my energy dropping every time I went in there. So I found two companies that were delivering food locally, and they were usually restaurant distributors, but obviously all the restaurants were closed in the first lockdown, and they had an abundance of stock, so they decided to deliver to residential homes. So we ended up using those, which was absolutely brilliant. And so there's lots of companies out there that you can use and cut out those big massive corporations. And what we've done in our community group as well, we've found wholesalers, and then we've bulk buyed as a community, because it works out unbelievably cheap. You're talking about 8 pence for a big bag of pasta when you're buying wholesale. Yeah, it's unreal. So, and you can get stored up on dried goods and things like that, tins and just so you've got a supply there for the community. So, yeah, it's been, I never thought I would live to see a day that I would have to be thinking like this, but here we are. So we've got to embrace it.
Like you are doing, hang on, I'm just going to sit my headphones on because it's the background noise. It sounds like you are doing an absolute amazing job. And I think we almost need to roll it out to other stand in the parks. You know, I know that our one isn't anywhere near as that sort of advanced.
I
So yeah.
spoke to who runs Stand in the Park in the UK, and her kind of ethos with Stand in the Park is they don't have group leaders, they don't tell them what to do. You choose your group, you run your group, they don't really get involved. But I said maybe we can make suggestions of here's some suggestions of what you could be doing in your group, just to kind of plant some seeds. Which she was quite on board with that idea. And I've spoken to the guys at Awaken Pages and said, you know, speak to Stand in the Park, get that out into the Stand in the Park communities so that they all list their businesses and we can all be ineffectively trade swapping. I'm using you're using me, that's it. So I think it's coming, it's going to take time, but it will be worth it, absolutely worth it.
It's exciting, you know, and that's where I want to sort of look to towards now. I think the amount of times I used to think in the last couple of years before all of this, how much I wanted to change, you know, that the system, I didn't like the system, you know, I was already thinking of homeschooling and things like that. And actually, it sort of pushed us that maybe we're already thinking like that to creating this new way
I
of
heard exactly
living.
the same yesterday. I said that all of this stuff needed changing anyway. Like the school system, as you just mentioned, is so unbelievably archaic. It forces square pegs into round holes, and it's just not something that is nurturing to our children anymore. We've evolved beyond that. We know that lots of these systems needed changing. Unfortunately, we was not going to change it unless we had a reason to change it. And now COVID came along and gave us an absolute number one reason. So we've had to, we've been forced to, but I think it's gonna turn out to be a really beautiful thing once it's created.
Yeah, I love it. Hold on to that vision, definitely. So next on your list, which is probably hard for people to do, ditch the iPhone.
Yeah, it's a tough one. I mean, a lot of people moved over to kind of the old Nokia type burner phones. I know they're not ideal. They're okay if you just need to be contactable and you don't want to be tracked. That I understand that, you know, for me personally, I rely on a smartphone for my business because being replying to emails on the go and all of that kind of stuff. People are, you know, obsessed with taking photos now, and I understand why we've become so used to it, and we don't need to be going back to the dark ages where you could only play Snake and make a phone call on your phone. We've come a long way, but we also don't want to be using that technology against us as well, which is what's happened. It's ended up being used against us. You know, data's become more profitable than oil. Every click and keystroke is being monitored and tracked, and then we become a product where we're just being sold to constantly. We've got all these adverts fired at us. It's being used for track and trace. You know, you've got all of these apps that are automatically downloaded on your phone that you don't have any say about, which is tracking everything. So, and Apple is unfortunately a company that are in the pockets of the government. So, an iPhone in particular is a difficult one to own and be conscious that you're not contributing to any of this, because obviously the corporations that are being advertised using the advertisement on all of these devices and social media channels, they're the big ones. So you don't get the small tiny businesses. So we're helping these, and I'm completely guilty of it. I'll be scrolling through Facebook and something crops up. I'm like, oh, that looks good. And you end up buying it. So we're just creating more and more profit for these companies. So I was not ready to ditch a smartphone. I was told about a company called Clearphone United, who have a decentralized blockchain phone. So you have your own SIM card. You buy the phone, you have your own SIM card, you put it into the phone, but although you can use all the different apps on your phone, you can still use Facebook if you want to, whatever, but it has a ring fence around it. So it cannot send the data anywhere. The data cannot be harvested. So that was my conclusion to trying to find a solution that I could use, that I wasn't contributing so much, I wasn't becoming a product and being sold to constantly, and my data wasn't going elsewhere and making it easy for these companies to make money from me. So yeah, that was the solution that I'd found so far. I do wish for the day, and I hope it comes, where I just don't need a smartphone at all. You know, maybe if I'm going to live off the land eventually, maybe that'll be the day where I just throw it into the bushes in the distance. But who knows? There's times where I'm very close to doing that anyway on a daily basis.
They are so handy for so many things, and I think also they have been great for connecting people as well. But I'm the same as you. I sort of hate it. I rely on it. I don't want to, but you know, it has its uses as well.
Completely enslaved to it, completely addicted. And yes, they're great for connecting people. I think I said in the speech, you can connect someone to the other side of the world, but you're completely disconnected to the person sitting next to you. And when people watching, you go into coffee shops and you've got family sitting there and they're all scrolling through their phones. No one's talking, no one's engaging, no one's connecting. That's precious time. So yeah, they have pros and cons. But the biggest downside for me is the way that they are being used against us. So I wanted to find a way that I could find a phone that would still suit me for my needs, but I wasn't contributing to all of this negative side of these devices.
That's a really good compromise. And I'm going to put a link to that. And I'm definitely going to, I'm in contract at the moment, but as soon as I can, maybe I'll even pay to get out, get a look at that.
Use your SIM card, so you put that SIM card into the new phone. So if you're paying monthly for that contract, you just continue with that. So whether you're with EE or you still continue with the same SIM card, it's just the phone you own. So generally, when you upgrade your contract, they include the phone in it. So you've got that phone anyway, but so you'd still, next time you upgrade, you wouldn't need to include a phone, so it might come down in price.
Yeah, okay, brilliant. I'm going to look into that as soon as I've uploaded this and done this. Yeah, definitely. Okay, so the next one, which I'm completely on this page, home ed. Try and home ed your kids if you can.
I think it's another difficult one for a lot of people, because people have become so dependent on schools for their life. You know, they go to work, they drop their kids at school. It's kind of free babysitting for the day. We've been brainwashed into believing, you know, that's what we do. The children need to go to school. That's what we should be doing every single day of our lives. But having deregistered my youngest in October last year and stepping away from that system, then you realise how conditioned a child becomes by being at school, and you also realize how much brainwashing goes on. So I may have said this to you before, but the final straw for deregistering my youngest was, she wasn't happy with the whole COVID situation, the bubbles and the hand sanitizing, but the final straw was the watching of the BBC news round every day before they left school. Now, we don't watch TV at home in terms of news and things like that, so why would I want her to be watching it at school? And when I pulled the school up about it, they said it was a government guideline, and all primary schools have been advised to do the same, to keep the children on top of what's happening in a gentle way. And I just thought, that is utter brainwashing. The BBC, of all organisations, you are choosing, have a discussion, sit down and say to the children, what's your thoughts on this situation? You know, that's how it should be dealt with, not putting them in front of a television and have all of this conditioning washed into their brain. It's frightening. So yeah, that was the final straw. And that's when you get to kind of sit back and see how much brainwashing goes on in these places. It's quite frightening, and there's a lot of undoing. I read a great book called The Unschooling Handbook, because we got very wrapped up in initially, okay, we need to do lesson plans and maths and English and science, and The Unschooling Handbook tells you about how the whole world is a classroom, and you don't necessarily have to be doing structured lessons. And we just found different ways to learn. Everything's a learning experience. It's been a journey. And I think that the school system at the moment is completely archaic. It doesn't nurture all of the talents across the board of all of our children. It puts bright children on a pedestal and leaves other ones behind, and ones that have very niche skill sets, arts and crafts, and they're often left as well. So yeah, it needs completely revamping and updating. But what I have found within the home education community locally, and whether you're considering home edding or not, I would definitely really encourage everyone to go and look at your local home ed community, because I was absolutely gobsmacked how huge mine is. There are so many people homeschooling now, and the numbers are huge. And there are so many like-minded people who are, there's forest schools, there's local tuition centres, there's loads of day trips that go on. They often hire halls and do big lessons, big group lessons, or they just meet at the park, picnic, and everything's a learning experience. And there are also people who are saying now, especially in my local community, speaking to people, other parents, who are starting to dip their toe into homeschooling, but they're not quite ready to just let go because school gives them the comfort of a structure. We've got parents saying, that's okay, I'm here, I'm home edding, just give them to me and they can come and do all the stuff that we're doing. You know, parents are ready now to support other people so we can create something amazing. And this is probably, out of this new world that's dawning, the most exciting thing, because it's so overdue, it's so needed, and this could really change future generations if we get this right, because it couldn't be more wrong as it is at the moment. And if we get this right, we could awaken a whole new generation and teach them ways that will serve them and lead them into a completely new way of living.
Yeah, I love it. I've got chills at that. And do you know what, it's funny, when I started looking into home ed, you know, for, so my youngest is from, you know, we've pulled her out now, and there are so many groups, you know, so many, like, and we're lucky, again, I don't know if it's just where we live, there's so many sort of alternative groups and sort of home ed, they're almost like mini schools, but they are home ed groups. So if you work, you can still manage, because it's not actually really that much difference in terms of, you know, the support you get. So yeah, I think it's widely known, you know, obviously it's not publicized, but when you look for it.
I don't want to publicize it because I don't want loads of people deregistering, but at the same time, that when you start to look at it, which is why I'm encouraging people to go and look at it, because you will be amazed. The people that it's attracting, they all want to help each other out. They're all standing up and saying, you know, I'll support you. So there are other ways we can create something else that's going to be quite astonishing, I think. And I'm speaking to a lot of people that are now wanting, because we've got a mass of teachers, mass exodus from the teaching career at the moment because of what's going on in terms of how children are being treated during this time, but also because they are going to insist on vaccines for teachers. So you've got this mass exodus happening. So now we've got this influx of teachers that are coming into the home ed community wanting to support what we're trying to achieve. So we're getting the good ones. We're getting the ones that are awake. They're evolving, they're moving with us. So there's forest schools being set up, there's an amazing tuition centre. I have to drive 45 minutes each direction for it, but it's worth it. So yeah, it's all happening. It's all happening, and this is the time to get moving on it. I don't believe that schools are going to be particularly safe come September because of things like GILLIT competence. More in the secondary schools is my concern. It's been slightly more tame in the primary schools, but obviously as the vaccine gets rolled out and the ages become less, I don't know how that's going to pan out. But I just think it's the best way to safeguard children right now. Is to remove them from that indoctrinating system.
And you manage it, you work, and you manage it.
Fortunate because I work for myself, so I can pick and choose my days, I can pick and choose my hours, but there are when I see a client, I'm generally with them for 3 hours minimum, so there are times in the day where my youngest is on her own and she has to get on with stuff. So she might do some baking, or she might watch a documentary, or there's some online lessons that they do. That there's a great website called Laugh, Learn, Play. I think they charge about £2.50 a lesson, and it's a Zoom call when you're in the lesson with the teacher, and there's other kids there, and you can pick whatever subject you want to learn about. She likes the history one, she likes the drama one. We sometimes do a bit of maths. So yeah, you just select what you want to do. So there are things that she can be doing in that time. It's not dead time. So yeah, we've structured it so that on the days that I don't work and I don't see any clients at all, we really immerse ourselves, and we probably get way more done than you would in an ordinary day at school anyway. So if when I'm with a client the next day, she just wants to veg around, it's not a big deal. We just It's child-led learning, which is what all schools should be anyway.
It was amazing when we were homeschooling, you know, during the first lockdown, and I was like, is this how little they actually do? You know, like, there's so much like registration and faffing around and getting them set up that the actual learning is and it's so, it was so sort of just in isolation what they were learning. I was like, this is ridiculous, you know, one minute you're learning about this and the next minute you're learning about something completely like irrelevant.
It's crazy. But if you wanted to follow that kind of curriculum, there's other websites like Twinkle that you pay to register, and you download, you print all of the work off. So, you know, we've done a bit language stuff with Twinkle. So it's all there. You can do it yourself anyway. But parents get really daunted. And I remember when I spoke to a few friends and they said, what do you mean you're homeschooling? Oh, my God, you're mad. You need to go and check yourself into some kind of retreat. What are you doing? Especially my youngest, because she's the free-spirited one. That's probably the hardest one to kind of handle. But it's been a blast. And she actually now, she's going into year six, and she's saying to me that she wants to go to secondary school because her sister's at secondary school. And it's breaking my heart a little bit because I'm going to lose my mate. I know, but obviously it depends what's going on at that point in time. We've got another year to decide. We'll apply, see what happens. But it's kind of live each day as it comes right now, isn't it?
A lot can change in a year, can't it? That's for sure.
A lot can change in a week.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so the next thing was reduce your toxic load, which, yeah, shouldn't we all be doing, trying to do the best we can?
I think now is a time that we should all be thinking about what we're exposing ourselves to mentally and physically, and just really keeping on top of our health. Toxic people is probably the biggest thing that we need to be moving away from, which people often overlook. When I work with clients and say, what do you think you're exposed to with regards to toxins? And they'll speak about junk food, and they'll speak about medication they're on, and they'll speak about environmental exposure. But when you come to people, that's when it generally is like, it hits a bit of a nerve, because they realise that they are allowing themselves to be around certain people that are no good for them. And I always say there's two types of people, radiators or drains. There's people that you radiate around, there's people that drain your energy. And that's not to say cut every drain out of your life, but you do need to be mindful of how people make you feel, and then limit the time that you spend with them if they really do bring you down.
What about I guess family, that's the hard one, isn't it? When you've got drains that are family.
Yeah, it is a hard one. And it depends on your situation. For me personally, I have cut family members out because I just don't believe that I need to be around them. They've been particularly negative towards me. I've cut them off. But I know not everybody wants to do that or even can do that. It depends who they are. These weren't, you know, mums or dads. They were aunties and uncles and cousins. But you wouldn't cut your mum off necessarily. Well, I personally wouldn't have. But it's hard for me to say that. I don't have mum anymore. The thought of cutting her off, it just would be heartbreaking. But everybody's situation is different. And I think even if you can't cut somebody off because you don't want to, you're not ready, just limit the exposure that you have to them, and also have very clear boundaries. Mm. You know, if there's about something. So a classic example in today's world is you get people saying, oh, my mum keeps going on to me about why aren't you having the vaccine? You've got a responsibility. You just say to them, mum, I don't want to talk to you about this. Okay, we've clearly got very different views. I love you. I don't want to fall out with you. We're just going to have to agree to disagree and not discuss this. Okay. And that's it. Have them boundaries. Don't be afraid to say that, because you need to protect yourself and your own vibrational frequency, and things like that will bring you down, and it will also make you feel resentful towards people, and you don't want to have a relationship with somebody that's full of resentment. So it's having very clear boundaries, or limiting the time that you spend with them, or if you feel ready to, or you've tried all of those things. This is where I got to with my family. I tried all of those things, and it was still very, very toxic, and so that was it. We were done.
Yeah, and you're right, people do overlook relationships, and I think that whole, I mean, we spoke about that a bit actually on the last podcast, but I think sort of our emotional relationships have such a huge impact on our physical health, which is so unrecognized in the mainstream.
Especially in medicine, allopathic medicine, you walk into a hospital, everything's department, like Marks and Spencer's. You've got all different departments, and we're not department store. We are a system of systems. Everything's interlinked, not less the mind and body. And even in allopathic medicine, you've got mental health and physical health. It's very separate. But what they're not looking at is when somebody's mental health is very poor, then that has an impact on their physical health and vice versa. So, you know, you can't fix one without fixing the other. So, yeah, when I'm speaking about reducing your toxic load, of course it's what you're eating. Of course it's environmental exposure. And we can all take control of that and be better. There's always room for improvement, no matter where you are. There's always room for improvement with those things, but also think about the exposure of people and social media. You know, take digital detoxes and restore your energy, because it can be extremely draining and toxic. I mean, I've woke up this morning to a whole load of messages calling me all kinds of things: controlled opposition, a government shield. It happens. This is my life now. So I just reply to a few, blocked a few people, and you get on with your day, because you've got to have that boundary. And I don't want to be one of those people. Like a close friend recently has just come away from the whole movement because her mental health was being affected so significantly. I don't want to be that, because it's too important to me. I want to carry on. But if I'm going to carry on, then I need to learn to have those boundaries, block that out and move on. And yeah, everybody needs to do that, because people get dragged into this stuff so easily and get pulled down all these different rabbit holes. So think about how you're protecting yourself from that.
Yeah, definitely good advice. And you know, I had I just came off Instagram only for like, I think it was 4 days, but I thought it was getting really heavy a couple of weeks ago. Like just the energy, I just felt so drained. And I thought, I've got to come off just for a few days. And tell you what, just having that little break, you know, it hasn't got to necessarily be all or nothing, but I felt like I'm ready to go again. It's fine. I feel good.
A Facebook ban, so I've had 4 30-day Facebook bans on the bounce. Again, I'm back a few days and they ban me again. I'm like, yes, I've got a month off. It's lovely. Ban me again.
Facebook feels particularly heavy though, I have to say. Like compared to, I do find Instagram slightly lighter than Facebook.
Yeah, I think Instagram is lighter. I think Twitter is the worst. Yeah. And I really try and avoid Twitter. I find it absolutely, it is so nasty, and I'm like, oh well, I don't even know if I want to comment, because it's all going to backfire. It's, you have to really protect yourself on Twitter. So I've never really got too involved in Twitter, but yeah, Facebook, I think maybe because that's where my biggest following is, on Facebook. So you get all of this kind of craziness fired at you, but you know, I'm accustomed to it now. We're a year and a half on. I've been doing this for this amount of time. I didn't entirely sign up to it, it just happened accidentally, but here I am, and I've got to learn ways to protect myself. So yeah, I've learned fast with that one. I've had to.
Well, thank you for continuing, because you send such a positive strong message, so it's really appreciated. And so the last two, raise your vibration and stay in the light. I love, that's when you have me in tears by the end of your speech. It was like, oh
yeah, I wanted to end on a positive note, this, although it all was very positive, I guess, and that was the remit, keep it positive, keep it solution focused. And yeah, I think, again, people getting too bogged down with the negativity, the fear. Fear suppresses the immune system and fear creates obedience. So they're the two reasons that it has been the main currency used on all of this agenda. You know, we'll push the fear because then people will get ill anyway and people will follow orders because they do when they're fearful. So we need to make sure we're counterbalancing that. What's in your toolkit to lift your frequency? So when you are feeling fearful, are you just going to sit in fear and let your mind run away with you and start creating all these different scenarios of everything that could possibly go wrong in the world? Or are you going to think, no, that's enough of that. Let me get out my journal and write. Let me do a quick meditation. Let me do a soma breathing. Let me go for a walk with the dog in nature. Let me put on my favorite song and dance around the living room. Let me look at some old photos of all the amazing times that will come back. You know, what are you doing to move yourself away from that and raise your vibrational frequency? Because we have so much that we can do. And if you look on a daily basis of everything that's bringing us down, and then you look at a daily basis of what you're personally doing to lift yourself back up again, it will be completely unbalanced. And that's what needs addressing.
Completely. And those small things, like, yeah, days quite often when you do feel a bit low, you can feel like not doing anything. And my husband's great for like getting out in nature, and he'll say to me, Lisa, go for a walk, take the dog for a walk. And just, even if it's just 10, 15 minutes, I come back and your head just gets cleared and you feel more positive, particularly if you like listen to music or something that, yeah, lifts you further.
Grounding really helps me, and it really just helps me to reconnect to what's important again. And the Soma breath work, so the Wim Hof type breathing, is amazing. I find it it is honestly like taking some kind of recreational drug, flooding your body with that amount of oxygen in one hit. You feel like you're floating around the room. It really is phenomenal. And afterwards, you just can't help but lay there smiling. It's just insane. You produce natural DMT, which is what drugs help you to produce anyway, but you're producing it naturally through oxygen. And obviously it moves you from a sympathetic into a parasympathetic nervous system. So it helps your body to rest, repair, recover, digest. And we're just not doing that enough. We've got all of these tools within us. The lady that I follow is an amazing lady. You've seen, I share some of her stuff. She's called Shay Marie, and her.
How do you spell that? I was actually just going to ask people that want to know more.
MAREE, and then her page on Facebook also is called. So you can follow her under that name, but she's also Namas Shay. So instead of Namaste, Namas Shay.
Oh, I like that.
But she does free Soma breathing workshops that like an hour long, and wow. She'll add on her page, and you just lock onto the Facebook Live, or sometimes she'll send a Zoom link through an Eventbrite page, all completely free, because she'd seen me mention breathing in one of my first earlier interviews, and she messaged me and said, I do breathing and I'm going to do some free ones, would you advertise them? And the amount of people who have messaged me saying, oh my god, the breathing is unreal, it's helping me, it's keeping me sane, it really is such a phenomenal tool. And her strap line is get high on your own supply, but obviously our own air supply. And you really do. I mean, for my misspent youth, I could have saved a lot of money knowing that this, I had the capability of doing this myself.
Okay, I'm gonna check her out tonight, and yeah, we need to get our girls doing this before they reach the teenage years.
Honestly, yeah, my girls do. Well, not so much honey, because she doesn't sit still for 5 minutes, but my eldest Angelica, she quite likes to breathe in and the meditation and the journaling, that's her vibe. So yeah, and I've sent them for breath workshops before now. They really liked it.
Okay, I'm gonna get my kids onto this, definitely. I should have done it sooner, but better late than never. And then, yeah, the last one, stay in the light. I love what you said, where you said about the door to the age of Aquarius isn't going to magically swing open, you know.
We've got to do our thing. I follow quite a lot of like the New Age stuff, Laurie Ladd and Magenta Pixie. And I feel like it's amazing, but it can also give people a false sense of security that this new world is just going to emerge and it's going to be beautiful. It's just there for us, waiting for us to walk in. unfortunately, we all have a part to play in creating it first. It's not going to magically appear, and it's not just sitting there holding tight, meditating till the nth hour, and then it's going to be there. We have to play a part in creating it. We have to be doers. And that is the bit, the kind of missing link that I think a lot of these new age people are pushing out. They are expecting, they are making people expect that there's going to be a savior. Oh, don't worry, it's all going to be fine in the end. We have to create it. We have to be our own saviors.
It's so funny you said that, because I had that sort of realization. Like I realized I'd kind of naturally tailed off from listening to the likes of those. And they, like last year when I was in the like pits of worry, and you know, when it was really in the middle of lockdown, they really uplifted me and pulled me out of a, you know, bad place. But I was like, it's interesting, I haven't been listening so much. And then it twigged to me, it's because there's not action. Like I feel like it's gone beyond that. It's time to do stuff, not sit there waiting for you know, a savior to come save us. So
your discernment with all of these people, and I did a podcast yesterday on Awaken Pages, and I mentioned that I'd been listening to Russell Brand Revolution, and that's when all the Shield comments come in. Oh, he's controlled opposition, so must you be. I use my discernment when I'm listening to people. You know, no matter what I think of them or what I think they're involved in, they still might have a valuable message, and I'm focusing on the message, not the messenger. So therefore I can listen to his stuff, and some of it I do disregard, don't really agree with that. You know, he's quite favourable for a one world currency. You know, that's, I don't agree with that. I don't agree with digital currency, but I'll pick and choose what I want to take from it. And that's what we need to do. We can't put all of everything into one person, because as I said, no one is your saviour. So you pick and choose what you want, and then you take it and you create your own toolkit, you create your own action plan, and you run with it. I'm just throwing out ideas of the things that I'm doing. I'm not saying that my way or the highway. I'm just saying this is what I'm doing. You might want to listen because it might give you some inspiration. And if it doesn't, that's fine. That's not a problem at all. We don't need to start throwing baseless accusations around.
Jacqueline, you come across as one of the true ultimate light workers. So, you know, what you do, you've just got such a genuine, lovely warmth and, yeah, clarity about you. And I love what you do, you know, and I think you've given such valuable advice. You know, people, yeah, if you want to follow it, do. If you don't. But, you know, there's so much that you've given people to work on, and they can pick and choose what resonates with them.
Now's the time for action. You know, we've spent a long time doing a lot of talking, a lot of sharing of information, but that's not going to change anything, I'm afraid. For me, it's about creating what we want.
Yeah, perfect. Is there anything, I really appreciate you going through this, and I'm just so glad that I get to put this up on my podcast, and I'm going to share it sort of as much as I can so that people that haven't listened to your speech, which they really should, if they haven't, they can pick up things via this as well. Is there anything we haven't covered that you just want to mention at all?
No, I think we've gone through it all, so hopefully it resonates with people.
It will do, definitely. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Enjoy your break now.
Oh, thank you, Jacqueline.